Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Molly and Hall.
We're trying to wake Chicago up.
Live at 5 on 670 The Score.
And here they come.
Michael Lombardi used to be a regular, and now he's back in the media on VSiN.
You couldn't get me to buy Mitchell Trubisky if you had him at a discount rack at Seeley's basement. You think Trubisky can throw the ball through a keyhole with that precision? There's no chance, right?
One of the problems with Michael Lombardi, and we've seen this problem here in town, and we see this problem a lot of different places. When a guy is a great communicator and he's also a talent evaluator, you can get in a room with him and you're trying to figure out who to pick, and he can talk you in or out of a move.
Very persuasive.
Because he has strong opinions
about
it.
And he's very polarizing.
And he is very polarizing.
Doesn't mean he's always right.
Depending on the position a guy like that is in, he can get you in trouble. If you got a bunch of area scouts and one of them is able to be persuasive, that's not necessarily a good thing. I really believe that you got to be careful about having a guy like Lombardi because of the persuasiveness in the articulation, as opposed to whether or not what he's saying is accurate.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall.
Your morning guy over there.
Mornings on The Score.
We are delighted to welcome in Blackhawks owner and chairman Rocky Wirtz.
Was this, what happened yesterday, somewhat inevitable?
What I said last year is you have to evaluate everything as you're going along. So you're hoping for the best. And obviously we weren't happy with the results that the team had last year, and we weren't going to do again, have another year like we had last year. So you have to then play it out.
Mully Hall.
I'm so fired up.
Here we go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to The Score. How you holding up there, Mr. David?
Good morning, Mully. Good Thursday. Big night tonight at the United Center.
Big night tonight. The beginning of the new era.
Yeah, it is. It'd be an odd atmosphere there at the United Center. Jeremy Colleton, the 33-year-old head coach, first Hawks game without Joe Quenneville.
And you and Les in a pretty heated argument about how their response would be.
Was that heated?
No. Les just told you they will cheer for Joel. They'll hear a giant cue. And you said, oh, is that what you think? And that was pretty much the extent of the argument.
That was the extent of it. They think he's going to – he thinks that when they introduce the new coach that fans are going to chant, cue,
but cue. But the way you said, oh, made me think that you didn't agree with him.
I don't really agree with that.
Okay. But you didn't argue with him.
No, I did not argue with him. He's been on the air a long time. I wanted to let him end his show.
Oh, he'll stay and argue with you until 9 if you'd like.
He's standing out there waiting for the break.
Waiting for a break.
Look at Kevbo. Look at Kevbo, David. Look what he's doing. Look at he's wearing.
Oh, he is pandering with the Loyola t-shirt.
I would never do such a thing.
Total pandering.
What a coincidence.
Huh? Oh, my gosh. You guys
are Rambler
gear.
The Screamers and Howlers podcast is Ramblered up.
They're 1-0 when you think they're going back to the Final Four now.
I never said that.
I'm getting on early this year. Not waiting until March.
Getting on the bandwagon early.
Look at that. That's nice.
They're fun to watch the other night. Yeah, they were.
Yeah, they were fun. Yeah. Zion Williamson kind of stole the thunder, okay, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Are you a big fan of the Fugees? Are you a Lauryn Hill fan at all? Are you familiar with that song, To Zion?
I am familiar with it. I wouldn't say fan.
Well, I am
overstating
a fan.
I'm
a fan, and that I'm a huge fan of that song, and that is a song about, I believe that's her son with Bob Marley's kid, right? Ro Marley was her boyfriend, I think, and they had a child together, and it's like the record company wanted her to abort the child, and she wouldn't, and she had the kid, and it's like, now the joy of my world lives in Zion. I mean, it's like such a beautiful song.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I see Zion Williamson, that song,
you
it's
think
like,
of it?
I mean, it's a great, it's almost, it's got like a anthem type presentation to it. And I like, I watch that kid and there's like a.
You hear that song in your head?
There's a joy in my heart hearing that song.
I watch that kid and I think of LeBron James. I don't think of that song.
Do you really think of LeBron?
Well, Steve Kerr made that comparison. And now when you look at him, it's like the physicality that he has and the edge that he seems to hold over everybody else he's playing against. I know it's one game, so we're basing a lot on that. But when you watch the highlights from that one game, oh my goodness.
I think it was Jay Williams, right? The kid has 1.8 million followers on Instagram or Twitter or whatever because of his dunks. And
well, he's been a thing since he was a sophomore in high school.
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
High school, yeah.
But I think it was Jay Williams, the former Bull, the motorcycle accident guy. He said that he's a combination of Charles Barkley and Dominique Wilkins because of his explosive leaping ability. Like the guy's 285. Now, he doesn't look like Chuck at all, but think about that.
285 pounds, and he's 18 foot 7 years old,
and he has this explosive, like Vince Carter kind of body of explosive dunking. Now the other kid on that team might be the better player,
maybe. I'd take Zion in a heartbeat. And Steve Kerr is the one who mentioned LeBron James when asked about him, and I thought that was interesting because very rarely do you hear an NBA head coach comment on a college prospect, especially with praise like that.
Yeah, and he said, didn't he say, well, I don't want to get myself in trouble? He like immediately tried to back off. It was very funny.
But he'd already
But it was the buzz of the basketball world when they beat Kentucky two nights ago by, 34 points?
Didn't matter if it was Kentucky. It was interesting that it was Kentucky, but he stole the show.
Well,
inside, outside, whatever he wanted to do.
Kentucky's supposedly pretty good. Basically, he didn't steal the show, David. They won the NCAA tournament two nights ago. That's what happened. Their price went down to like, plus 250? There's nobody else, like plus 800?
That's absurd.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Vegas got on the bandwagon. And it's crazy. They won the NCAA tournament.
So, there's Zion Fever. And looking at the Bulls last night, they certainly could use him. They could use him.
Oh, and they're doing great to get him, right?
Well, they're doing all they can.
They're doing everything
they're possible. Certainly cooperating. But that was Anthony Davis. Bulls lose 107-98. 32 points, 15 rebounds.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Man among boys.
Mm-hmm. And what is it now? 5 of 6 that the Bulls have lost? I thought that Wendell Carter Jr. played okay, 17 points and
he's always 11 rebounds. Respectable,
yeah.
Bulls have a problem, though. If you have a team that's supposed to be a good three-point shooting team and you hit 9 of 31, not good.
What did you think of Shaved Nico?
it's still very odd to look at.
So distracting.
Yeah.
It was hard for me to watch him every time down. And then, and like the entire time, I'm just like, oh, show a close up. Show a close up. Because he has that kind of, that Nico grin, but it's even more kind of, I don't know, twisted grilled grin of Nico. It was weird.
He's averaging 21 points a game and did not have a great night, but
he looked 25 years younger.
He did look very young, youthful looking Nico Mirotic. And good for him. Because he's a guy that needed a change of scenery. There's no question about it. And the Bulls obliged because he's fulfilling his potential for somebody else. I mean, Gar Forman was right, asterisk.
Would you say they punched his ticket?
He's always going to be known for that.
Well, that's it.
He's always going to be known for getting.
On the receiving end of a, and for
having his face broken.
And for ruining the draft pick. I mean, it was his performance last year that led them to.
Wendell Carter Jr. is not bad, though.
Never said he was bad. Him. Just, he's not, what's his name? Luka Doncic. Is that the guy? He's unbelievable.
Yeah.
He's like the real deal, and he's kind of a showman. And he's not some frail little guy that's going to break down as the year goes on.
And have you seen his mother?
No.
She's a beautiful lady.
Is that right? Oh, wow.
I'm just saying. Got to factor everything into the equation when you're evaluating a young player.
Okay, Mike Lombardi.
Wow.
Talent evaluator.
No.
Extraordinaire.
She looks talented.
I find it amusing that once upon a time, the guy like Kevin would be looking at the player's girlfriend, and now here he is admiring his mother. You're about 5 years away from eyeballing that grandmother, pal.
She's all grown up now.
She's not that much older than I am. Doncic is only 19, for crying out loud.
Could be your son.
Come on. He could be.
No, he couldn't be.
stepson.
Yeah. Could be my stepson. Oh, gosh. Okay, Mrs. Robinson.
A lot of baseball stuff going on out west.
Yeah, there's we buried our lead, didn't we? There could be trouble in the Mully and Haw show. There could be a paradise problem for us.
Jim Hickey is looks like it's more likely he will not be coming back than will be coming back. Various reports kind of differ on the certainty, but it does not look good for Jim Hickey.
Well, I hope not. He's a wonderful fella. Really a nice person.
He was good. Very, maybe too good.
Really?
On the air.
So here you are insinuating, with your smiling eyes, that our interviews with Jim cost him his job.
No, I didn't say that.
I'm saying that
he had a tendency to be very candid, which is great for radio, but not always great for a baseball organization or sports organization. His candor wasn't as welcomed by the Cubs, maybe, as it was by us. Would you agree with that?
I don't know. I'm not in the meetings. Haven't told me. I didn't think
you should make a few more meetings.
I didn't think he was leaking any secret information.
He wasn't, but he came out pretty. What he did, I think that he was not shy in establishing timetables for injured pitchers to return.
Fair enough. But
and that always gets a coach in any sport in trouble.
But Jim didn't. Jim. Or Joe didn't care what Jim had to say. You're talking about, and I'll say this, and I'm far be it from me to criticize the powers that be with the Chicago Cubs, because, this all is prefaced by the fact that these guys know more baseball than I'll ever be able to read about, let alone learn, let alone know. But the fact of the matter is, instead of worrying about what the timetable is coming out of the pitching coach's mouth and whether it's accurate or a little too accurate, and you don't want that out there, maybe sign better players. Maybe get guys that aren't injured all the time. Maybe get guys that aren't completely ineffective. That might be a better course of action than worrying about what the pitching coach is saying during an interview. And I've gone too far, and I regret it, but I just can't believe that you're going to blame him for a couple of those offseason signings that were absolute train wreck awful.
I could not agree with you more, and I look forward to hearing the next pitching coach on the Midday Show.
you are very funny and cruel all at once. All right, we've got the 5-5 in the offing, and we'll get to it now. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This segment of the show brought to you by Sport Clips. Check in online at sportclips.com/check-in and claim your spot today.
It's 5-5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5-5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
How will Khalil Mack's projected return from injury play out in the number of times the Bears sack Matthew Stafford?
Well, I think that it will play out in terms of immediate impact from Khalil Mack himself. I feel confident in saying that upon his return on Sunday, he will have a strip sack. I think we've seen him do that pretty regularly. I think it also it raises up the number of sacks for those around him, because I think he is such a headache for people. So I think he gets a strip sack, and I think there will be, let's say, two more sacks from defensive linemen, one of which could be him, one of which probably will be Akeem, and there'll be another one in there that he maybe chases a guy or whatever. So I think he really makes that big an impact. And I think they've been close. They've had a lot of chances for sacks. I know they had four last week, and they had struggled to get sacks consistently, but I'm talking about defensive linemen getting sacks, because that's been an area where there has been some issues. And I think that that Khalil Mack, first of all, I think that it's open season on Matthew Stafford. We saw him get sacked 10 times by a real good defensive line. I think Mack is better than anybody on the Vikings, and I would expect him to have a strip sack, David, maybe even two sacks, but definitely a strip sack. And and 3 sacks minimum from defensive linemen in the game.
Wow, that's high expectations, but I think it's probably appropriate given the way the Bears' defense is playing coming into this game. Matthew Stafford will turn the ball over. We've seen that happen. 10 sacks is a high number to – it's a high bar to clear. I don't think they'll get 10.
No.
Maybe half of that is attainable, and I think Khalil Mack is – going to be a guy who gets at least one, maybe two. Matthew Stafford's 10-6 career against the Bears, 16 games. In 16 games against the Bears in his career, he's been sacked 38 times. Okay, that's quite a few. I mean, and there have been games in there. Remember when they had Julius Peppers, it seemed like he was always chasing Matthew Stafford from behind and making something bad happen for the Lions offense. So I think that could be what you see in terms of Khalil Mack's impact on this game. I think the Bears probably have 4 sacks, and one of them involves a fumble, and one of them involves a forced interception, and turnovers will be the big factor created by the Bears' defense on Sunday.
Of course, Detroit's number one priority entering this game, protect Matthew Stafford. You're coming off a game where he was sacked 10 times, and you have, of course, the return of Khalil Mack. It seems like he's 100% healthy. It sounded like he could have returned a week ago, but they just wanted to make sure, didn't really need him against Buffalo here. But even though it's going to be the Lions' top priority, I don't know that it's going to matter. And yeah, the Vikings' front is so deep. They just have so many guys that rush the passer. And the Bears, it's really mostly Mack and Akeem Hicks as well. Detroit has allowed 2.9 sacks per game this season, and that includes the 10-sack game. So you think, oh, maybe they're not as bad. Maybe it was just a bad day. But things have been trending pretty bad lately. Recently, 10, 3, 1, 3, 3. So I expect the Bears to have 3 sacks and Mack to have 1.5 of them.
You're predicting a half sack.
That's where I'm setting the line.
That's so Vegas.
Things definitely trending in the wrong direction if you are a Lions fan or a member of the Lions. Joe just brought up that awful performance they had against Minnesota at the weekend. They traded perhaps their best playmaker a few days before that. That didn't really sit well with anybody up there either. And then you have the coach in his first year berating reporters for really no good reason. Things are going very Lions up in Detroit, which is great to see because I'd love to see nothing more than a loser franchise continue to lose. And I think that's what we're going to continue to see Sunday. While things are trending badly for Detroit, I think they're trending pretty well for the Bears. They're returning back home. They're getting their best player back. And when Khalil Mack has been healthy, he has been outstanding this season. So I will predict 2 sacks for Khalil Mack. I'm not going to go with the half, and I think he'll probably force a fumble on old Matty Stafford as well.
Well, the thing is, he looks for the strip sack before the sack, right? He looks for the strip before the sack, and it just becomes the fact that all of a sudden they smell him coming, meaning the quarterback, and they just kind of go down in a heap, fearing for their own lives, if you want to put it that way,
livelihood.
Yeah, the sack numbers should go up. I still don't expect 94 to have any sacks. He'll probably be dropping into coverage and backpedaling like he does so well.
He scored a defensive touchdown.
I mean, he was standing in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, hey, so all he had it, to ran do, it in. He ran he the right direction.
He ran the right. He knew which way they were going. Okay, okay, we're going. If we get the ball, we're going that way. We're defending. My shoulders are behind me. That's the goal line. There, go. Okay,
yeah, and he knew.
Great job, Leonard. You knew which way to go if the ball got in your hands. Congratulations.
How many defensive touchdowns did you score in your NFL career?
In my NFL career, none.
Wait.
Yeah.
So
in what
so
other career?
The question,
we got an Uncle Rico story
brag.
Coming.
So high school career?
Yes.
Describe. Okay.
Just when? An interception return for a touchdown.
All right. How was the celebration?
Were the rest of the freshmen excited?
Just handed the ball to the ref when I got
back
into the huddle.
Did you go Aaron Lynch?
Acted like I've been there before.
Okay.
I had like 85 yards in a JV game running fumble rooskies at guard. That was the best. We were calling fumble rooskies like crazy. Like 85
I love
yards
that.
Rushing.
The fumble rooskies.
You guys had these philosophical questions.
Mitch Trubisky acknowledged teams have begun to defend his running ability by assigning a spy. Trubisky also seems to throw better when he runs more. Would you like to see him run more or less against the Lions?
That's an interesting question. I liked what I heard from Mitch Trubisky yesterday, going all sort of football-y, talking about the way defenses have adjusted to his ability to run the football, assigning a spy to him. And the more, teams can't blitz the Bears as often as maybe they would like to against Mitch Trubisky because of that ability. Because when you go man coverage, as everybody is finding out, then you open yourself up to long runs by the quarterback. I've come around on this. I don't think you want as many designed runs as maybe you've seen at times with the Bears. I don't like the idea of a quarterback sweep. I don't like the idea of him just tucking and running necessarily. But as you pointed out, Mully, and it's a good observation, when he runs and makes something happen with his feet, sometimes that opens up the things that he does well with his arm. And it's a confidence thing. And I think he builds confidence when he makes plays. And when he makes plays with his feet running the football, I wouldn't be, 4 to 5 times a game is okay with me. And sometimes you're going to have to tuck and run to keep the defense honest. And his acknowledgement of the fact that the teams are beginning to spy, I'm not sure if that was an intentional revelation, but you don't often hear him be as open as he was yesterday, I think, in terms of, talking about schemes and the way teams are defending the Bears. I liked what I heard, and I'd be okay seeing him run 4 to 5 times again against the Lions.
It was interesting, Big Z checking in on the national perspective of Mitchell Trubisky, and we talked about this a lot yesterday, the idea that that you had Brady Quinn talk about him, and you had Mike Lombardi just absolutely tear him to pieces. Big Z adds a couple of more with Greg Rosenthal of NFL.com calling him the most divisive quarterback in football because according to the stats, because of the way that his ranking shifts so much. On ESPN.com, Bill Barnwell actually called him Blake Bortles of the North. Wow. So I would rather see Mitch in time, on time. I'd rather see him operate from the pocket and, kind of silence the critics.
Is that who he is?
Run around. It's not who he is.
I don't think he's who. But how do you reconcile that with what you said about when he runs, he throws better?
I think when he runs, it seems to give him more confidence and it makes him a better player. I just think that the future of his career needs to be as a quarterback, not as a running quarterback. And I think that if you break down his numbers, you see some Cam Newton there. Cam Newton is an MVP candidate. Mitch is not. He is, what Pro Football Focus has him ranked 29th out of 30 quarterbacks or something that they rank. I mean, I'm just saying, at some point, you got to accept that running the ball is not the way to go and making plays out of the pocket is the way to go. I think there's a difference between him running the ball and him being on the move and shortening the field and lessening the decision-making process and all that stuff. But no, David, I keep thinking that it's not a sustainable thing, the actual flat-out running back stuff that we're seeing more of these days. I don't know. I think it would quiet a lot of these national voices if he just had a really good passing day.
Yeah, Pro Football Focus had Mitch Trubisky ahead of Sam Darnold, Nick Mullins, and Nathan Peterman, and that's the list. You bring up Cam Newton, and he doesn't have the build of Cam Newton. You're not concerned at all. It's odd, because during the games, when I see him on the move, getting ready to pass, I think, okay, this is going to be a more accurate pass, and it just feels like that is the case. They didn't run him last week. Why? Because they didn't need him, because it was a ball game in the second quarter. So, of course, defenses are adjusting. I like him moving in the pocket, but as far as designed runs, I agree with you guys. I'm against that.
I don't really mind either way, as long as he's productive and they're moving the ball on offense and they're putting up points. I think that's kind of the most important thing. I'd love to see him sit in the pocket and, complete 75% of his passes and throw for 400 yards, throw for 4 touchdowns. And hopefully that's in there somewhere with Trubisky, but for the time being, with all the caveats we have to address every week, on Monday, whenever we come in here, we talk about his performance from the last game, like, oh, well, he didn't have this, and he didn't have that, and he's in the second year of his offense, and he didn't play in college. I understand everything has to be a work in progress, and he's constantly making adjustments, so I don't think you need to expect him to go out there and be Tom Brady or be Aaron Rodgers and sit back and hurl the ball 70 times or anything like that. I just think you move the ball, you get first downs, you score points. I don't care if you're running, I don't care if you're passing, doesn't matter to me.
shoot, I'm with Kevin again. I just win the damn game. Do whatever it takes. Run the ball, throw the ball.
But don't get hurt.
Don't get hurt, well, and don't turn the ball over.
That is a problem.
Remember that, though.
Don't turn the ball over.
When you're evaluating Mitch on a weekly basis, though, because what you just said is the way that Nagy has instructed us to evaluate him, wins and losses.
It's all about wins. Okay. You take the metrics and you know what. Flush them right down the toilet for all I care. Okay, I give a rat's rear end. If they're winning, I don't care if he's got 37 touchdowns or 12, as long as the Bears are winning.
You know, I understand the question, but at the same time, I'd like to keep it to hockey questions only.
What kind of fan reaction do you expect for the Blackhawks tonight for the first game of the post-Quenneville era? Will it be celebratory or somber?
I think when the new head coach is announced, there'll be a giant cheer of Q. Okay, that wasn't me. I forgot. I was just repeating Les's opinion. I think that there's going to be curiosity about the first game under the new coach. I think there'll be scrutiny of it, and I think there will be. Are we talking about the crowd react in the moment? I think that the fans will give this guy a chance. I think that people will be. I think Hawk fans want him to succeed. I don't think they'll feel like it's disloyal to Joel to cheer for this guy, and I don't think they should. I think that this is whether we're looking at it as the post-Quenneville era, whether we're looking at it about who's not there. I think Blackhawk fans want that team to do well, and I think that Chicago fans understand you got to give a guy a chance. It's this guy's big moment, and it shouldn't be spoiled by people chanting Q at him.
I think you're right. I think that when you get in that atmosphere at the United Center before Hawks games, I think there's a very much a familiar feeling. There's a vibe. There's an electricity. And that will carry the day. I think there will be a lot of mixed emotions about looking down there and not seeing Joel Quenneville for the first time since 2008. And that's going to be an adjustment. But I don't think the Hawks fans will carry it out and take that out on Jeremy Culleton. I think they'll give him a chance. He's 33 years old. There's a lot to like about a young head coach, and it's not his fault that he was thrust in the middle of this maybe tug of war or this transition. He's just the guy who it's his time right now, and I think Hawks fans will be more celebratory than somber because, look, they want to see the good in this. They want to embrace something new and exciting. They want the season to turn around. So I think they'll get behind that. There's still Kane and Taze down there. There's still Duncan Keith down there, Corey Crawford down there. There's still a lot to get excited about for Hawks fans. And I think that will ultimately be what drives them tonight at the United Center.
And right before my 5 o'clock update, Les poked his head in here and made sure to tell me that he thinks that they will be chanting Q at the beginning of the game as well.
Get it?
And as always, Les is 100% correct. I actually do think fans will say something.
You're
about
full
Q,
of crap.
Or there will be a Q chant at the beginning. I would love to see them announce Dan Bowman and see how he would be received, or John McDonough. Don't say it's Scotty Bowman's show. Don't say that.
I just always want Gary Bettman to be introduced.
Beavis. 24 hours from now, we'll be talking about how things are changed, how it's different at all. But I do think the fans will say Q's name or say something, some sort of acknowledgement of Q, and then they're going to drop the puck and they're going to move on. The emotions are still raw at this point. So it's going to, I guess, feel kind of weird before the game, probably a little somber, but then it'll change once they start playing.
Yeah, I think it's good that there was a couple of days that passed between the actual firing and the next game. So with that in mind, I think the fans that are going to be there will have mostly put this Quenneville saga behind them, while they will maybe be a little forlorn about it because Quenneville did lift 3 Stanley Cups during his time here. I think every Blackhawks fan just wants the team to do better than they've seen them this season. They've seen them the last couple of seasons, and if Jeremy Colleton is that guy, then so be it. Nobody is going in there tonight and going to say, oh man, I really want the Hawks to suck and continue to be bad now because Joel Quenneville got fired. Absolutely nobody is going to say that. If you go to the game and you're a fan of the team, you want them to win no matter who the head coach is. So I don't think there will be a somber atmosphere at all. I think the fans will be their normal, quiet selves until the Hawks score a goal. and then it'll be business as usual.
I wonder how many real diehard Blackhawk fans are not even going to show up tonight. Will there be any of that nonsense? Will people not go? Or are they excited to see, or at least willing to see, how the Blackhawks respond to Coach Q being gone? You can get a ticket for as cheap as $38 if you think that's a deal right now. I'm at SeatGeek.com.
That is a deal.
For $38 to go see a Blackhawks.
Very good deal.
So that's out there, and I guess we should keep an eye on that and see what direction, even if wins, if the losses continue, like how low will that bar be set to go to a Blackhawks game? Do I think that they'll yell Q? Will they yell C? Will it be somber? I don't think it'll be somber. I wonder if there'll be any mention or video of Q tonight at all.
Too soon,
right? Not at all. So I think your 300 level Blackhawk fans will definitely give this guy an opportunity. I'm just curious how many people won't show up.
When it starts to cost more to park than it is to get in the door, that's when you got problems.
Ooh. I think it's hard to answer those questions.
Segment brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Coach Collins and the Cats at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this winter. Season and single game tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. After hearing agent Scott Boras predict Addison Russell will return to the Cubs, in light of Theo Epstein's comments earlier in the week, what are the chances Russell remains a Cub now, and do you favor his return?
This is going to be an ongoing discussion all winter, I think, and I think it's an important one, and I do think it's an interesting one as well. I am very mixed here because my first reaction is I don't favor his return. I think that I'd be fine if Addison Russell moved on. They traded him. They parted company with him because of he violated the domestic abuse policy. I don't know that I would want anybody like that representing my organization. That's my first reaction. And then you hear what Theo Epstein had to say the other day, and I don't want to be cynical about that necessarily. I do applaud his social conscience. I applaud his willingness to step out there and say, you know, they want to try to help counsel, rehabilitate him. I do wonder about the baseball motivation there. I think it may be self-serving at times. Scott Boras, I kind of ignore what he has to say. He's an agent. I know where he stands. I know where his motivation comes from. The missing piece in all of this, Mully, is why I'll sort of reserve judgment fully here. I want to hear from Addison Russell, because if this is a guy who is in the midst of counseling, is in the midst of trying to change his life and change his behavior and change a lot of things about him that need to change, I want to hear from him. I want to hear how he handles it. I want to hear how mature he sounds. I want to hear him hold himself accountable publicly for something that he has yet to do. So until he does that, I guess I am in favor of him not being with the Cubs.
I enjoyed the questioning of one Scott Boras, and the question that he was asked was a good one, which is the fact that he's accepting of a suspension as part of MLB's domestic violence policy. Is that an admission of guilt after he denied he had done anything wrong? And he started to answer that, and then he kind of pivoted, and he said, anytime you accept a course of action where there is a direction given, the idea that we look at is that Addison is getting therapy. Anytime we try to improve people, we have a system that does that and brings attention to things in society that makes us better off the field. It's a positive step. I mean, it is an acknowledgement that he did do this. And frankly, as for that reason, I'm not really interested in Addison Russell anymore. I don't really find him, I was at a playoff game and there was a woman two seats over from us who was in pretty bad shape. She couldn't stand up or anything. She just screamed the entire game, Eddie! Eddie! And like, you know, we will occasionally, if my son and I are watching baseball and he comes up, we will scream that at each other, you know, because it was just a fun memory of a great atmosphere. I don't find it amusing anymore. I'm not like into the whole Addison Russell thing anymore. I thought that he was a really good young player. When I saw the picture of him and his bride having the baby, I just couldn't believe how young they were. It was just shocking to see that photo. She looks like she's, 15 in that photo when the first time I knew of her existence. And then you know, you read her blog and you see what's happened, and then comes the suspension. And, you know, I get it. Guys are going to be eligible to play, and you want to make the right baseball decision and all the rest of it. And I do understand the quest to improve people and give people another chance and all that. I'm just saying, in my heart, I'm not going to feel the same way about the guy. So I'm kind of done with him mentally, done with him emotionally. I just I don't find it amusing, and I'm not, you know, it's not this kind of fun, will he ever be an MVP.
You surprised
story.
They're entertaining the idea of bringing him back?
No, because I think ultimately, you know, he's going to serve a suspension, and he's going to be able to play for any team, and it's probably the correct baseball decision. And then you throw in the idea that, oh, we're going to help him. You know, there's all sorts of cover for that, but the guy has absolutely no value at all right now. You could get rid of him and get nothing in return. It'd be very hard to get anything back if you build him up and again, that sounds awful cynical, and I don't strictly mean it that way, but I am a little bit disgusted by the situation.
Yeah, two very different questions here. I've always felt that Russell would be back, and after hearing the organization speak and even his agent, even we know his agenda, though. But I feel more confident that that's going to be the case. Before he's even able to play, we are still 6 months away from that time. What do the Cubs value most? What does Theo Epstein value most? He's going to say all the right things. They're going to try to help Addison Russell take all the right steps. But let's not forget, what is number one to that guy? It's winning. And I don't even know what's second. It is winning above everything else. And everything they've built towards is winning a title and now being in the midst of this championship window. Now, do I want him back? No, I don't want him back. Perfect world. I don't see him in a Cubs uniform ever again. It's not a perfect world. A player doesn't have any value even under control for a while, at least at this point in time. But I think he will be back, and I do not favor his return.
Cubs lost any sort of moral high ground that they ever would have had when they acquired Aroldis Chapman a couple years ago and essentially sold their souls for a World Series championship. So if Addison Russell has value to this Cubs team in the upcoming season, I have no doubt in my mind that he'll be back. And I'm not saying that he should be kicked out of baseball or anything like that. You know, he is serving his suspension. He was found, I guess, liable or guilty, however you want to phrase it, in part of this thorough investigation that Major League Baseball undertook. So there's no doubt that there was terrible behavior there at the hands of Addison Russell. But as far as the Cubs go, you know, if he has value to them as a defensive replacement or a starting shortstop, whatever they choose to do to him and they deem him to be a worthy enough baseball player, I have no doubt in my mind that he will be back as a member of the team.
Do I favor it? Of course not. How could you look yourself in the mirror and say you favor him coming back? The trouble is, if he's allowed to play baseball, if he's going to have a career, you know, is it tough for you to have him on another team when you still own him and have him at a nice price point? Also, what do you expect Theo to say? He's trying to at least make it out like they're doing the right thing. He's going to be able to play again. He's rehabilitating himself. We're helping him rehabilitate. In his heart of hearts, I would bet, you know, he'll never tell you the truth. We'll never know the truth on air, on the record. I think Theo Epstein would drive Addison Russell across the country if it took that to get him off of this team and actually get a bag of balls for him. Okay? I don't think they want him around. But we'll see what happens. Do I support it? No. I'd rather him not be here, but I also realize they need some middle infield help.
This is sort of a trick question.
Should the Bulls tank for one of the great Duke freshmen? And is the college basketball season fated to be dominated by freshmen?
Boy, Duke did win the NCAA tournament in their season opener, 34-point victory against the fantastic freshmen from Kentucky. I mean, what was it? There were like seven of them on the floor at one point. Seven freshmen studs going back and forth. And I know it was dominated by the guys from North, guys playing in North Carolina of the Dukies. But I'm not usually one that would say this early in a season to pull the plug on it. But I don't know that they're ever getting out of this hole. I mean, I watched that game last night.
Your full tank, huh?
I got to tell you.
Whoa.
I mean, it's an opportunity now to just be as bad as humanly possible and to come out of it with a player that could be a changing of the franchise type player. Here's my fear. Let's say Kevin Durant decides to leave. Is he coming here? You know, you saw Anthony Davis last night. Is he coming here? Is anyone coming here? How do you get better? You don't get better when you're the Bulls by waiting for the big free agent to come into town. LeBron, you know, even in his mid-40s, doesn't want to come here and play, okay?
No, you don't think Gar's going to convince him?
So, yeah. So I do think that this is a perfect storm and a wonderful opportunity to just deflate the ball and just keep running guys on the floor. Hey, guess what? We took another look at the X-ray. You know that... That's going to take him another 6 months. Oh, God, we had no idea. And then just try it again next year. I mean, I'm not even kidding. I mean, it's horrible to watch, and you want him to try hard. But it seems like even when they try hard, they do a real good job of losing in overtime. I can't believe I'm saying it because, I mean, how many games into it at 82-game slate are we? I'm ready to pull the plug. I'm ready to pull the
pin. It's tempting. Okay, I get it. I hear you, and I understand.
Did you watch those kids
play? Yes, I watched it.
Okay.
I watched
one of those, please.
Okay.
Can we have two?
And if you can guarantee that, I think that you
I'll have what she's having.
I think that you – okay. If you could guarantee that, I think you would have a different discussion. But I don't think you can guarantee anything about getting to that – spot in the draft, and there's too many variables in play because you also have to factor in this is the way I'm factoring it in. You don't have to do anything.
You got to be bottom three and get lucky.
Yeah, you have to, and
right now they're fourth
and
from the bottom.
And if you get bottom three and you get unlucky, then what have you sacrificed and what have you done?
Well, you still get somebody real
okay,
good.
Maybe.
There's a lot of them coming out.
But you have not played one game yet with Lauri Markkanen. You have not played one game yet with Bobby Portis and Markkanen and Dunn and Zach LaVine. And everybody that is, you know, Wendell Carter Jr., everybody is making some progress.
So why go ahead and Nico up the draft pick? Let's learn from last year, David. I hate to say it. Lauri Markkanen might want to go back.
Okay, that's your opinion. That's not my opinion.
I know it is.
I'm not ready to get there yet. I think it's too soon.
But the problem is by the time you get ready to get there, it's going to be too late because these guys will all be back. I mean, can't we just keep fogging up some X-rays for a while? You don't like that idea.
No, yes. I don't like that idea. I don't think that you're guaranteed anything. If you were, it might be different, but no.
Finally, getting back on board. Thank you for joining, Mike Mulligan. I appreciate it. You guys jumped on my throat a few weeks ago when I said, yes, let's tank, let's tank.
I hate it.
Getting on board. Here's the bottom line. When these guys are all healthy, LaVine, Markkanen, Dunn, Carter, you like what you're building there. But what are they? If they all max out, are they good enough to contend with the top in the Eastern Conference? And I don't think that's going to be the case. You still need to add more top-end talent. So, yes, Tankathon.com says they are fourth right now. Let's move up a little bit higher.
There are 70 games left in the season. They haven't had their best
player
all year long.
Did you watch that Duke team? Did you watch them play?
I watched a little bit of the
Duke
game.
You don't think they'd be a lot better with one of those guys?
I think three of those guys on Duke might be one of the best players on the Bulls right this second. But I can't go through this season with this mindset. I want to be able to enjoy Bulls basketball, and I want to be able to see them out there with their best players, with their intended lineup, and we haven't even seen any semblance of that right now. I mean, despite the fact that Markkanen and Dunn are out, we don't know when Denzel Valentine's going to be back. We don't know when Bobby Portis is going to be back. Let's let them get healthy before we deem this another lost season and let this group of kids and Fred, everybody's favorite head coach in town, let's let this group
see what do you think the season's going to be?
Can do.
It's not a lost season. They've lost 9 of 12 here to start, and when are these guys coming back? They just shut down Valentine
a
for a while.
Yeah, a few weeks, you know, a few weeks. Just be patient. We're not tanking yet. I'm not on the tank train or the tank.
Tanking talk is kind of hard, but Molly, I'm with you. By the time you decide that maybe you tank, maybe it's too late, but I do think they have to at least see what this team would be like, at least with Zach and Markkanen together. Right? I'd like to see that. The scarier thing is if they're not tanking and they still look like they look. I mean, I watched.
They don't have to tank to get there. I like that.
There was nothing to watch last night.
No.
Okay. I watched that game in bed after some sixth grade girls basketball practice. Okay. I liked what I saw at my sixth grade girls basketball practice.
Dustin Auerbach over here.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the only thing.
Cigar.
You know, me coaching basketball and girls sixth grade basketball on top of it. Okay. Just, you know, let that breathe for a moment. It was bad last night. It was real bad. And you know what was even worse? I really like Chuck and Bill on the score, but when I'm not when I'm laying in bed, I watch it on TV and I don't have the radio on with it. Oh. You know, it was real. You know, if you don't like Neil Funk, okay, listen. I don't know who that guy was last night.
What was that?
Ooh, real. I mean, ooh, real bad. They may as well let Stacy done the play by play. Real bad. Whoa.
He was doing a radio call on TV.
Did anybody else watch what I saw? I mean, how bad was that broadcast last night?
I don't know who it was.
I don't know. I couldn't even tell you. It was
I hope
laughable.
To never hear him again. Sorry.
312-644-6767 is the number. How will the Bears' sack total go up if Khalil Mack is playing? What will happen there? Mitch Trubisky has acknowledged that teams have begun to defend his running ability by assigning a spy. Do you want him? He throws better when he's on the run. He throws better after he's had a nice run. You want to see more of him running against the Lions? What kind of fan reaction do you expect tonight? How will you react to Joel Quenneville being gone and a new man behind the bench? And after hearing what Scott Boras had to say about Addison Russell, that he'll be back with the Cubs, after listening to Theo say roughly the same thing last week, what do you think the chances are that he remains a Cub now, and do you favor his return? Are you still on the Addison Russell bandwagon? Should the Bulls tank for one of the great Duke freshmen, for one of those guys in particular, one of two players in particular? What do you think? Are they fated to win freshmen? Are freshmen going to dominate the college a basketball season? We already saw a Cooper Kafis score 19 for the Ramblers. It's Mully and Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.